Oh, that's where I started off with these boxes that the government sets up. They say, okay, you're either First Nation, Inuit, Métis, status, non-status, off-reserve, on-reserve, all of these categories that are just simply ways of dividing what I call in the international term is indigenous peoples. And if you're a mutt like I am with mixed blood, then you really don't fit none of those boxes, or you fit them all. You know, it's I've always like when you look back on the names over the years, like the American Indian Movement, which I was a part of, right? Well, that brought together everybody, no matter what the hell you're, whether you were a full blood, half blood, or no blood, you know, like they would, it brought all the indigenous people together with their allies and their supporters. But anyway, those categories, I truly don't fit in those categories, and I don't like them. And so, this is where I was born. This is where I was raised. I was born in home for unwed mothers, so my mom didn't put my dad's name down on the birth certificate. So there's that whole thing of I don't have the piece of paper, right? There, you go down the list of names that have been given: Native, Indian, Aboriginal. The latest one. There's the latest where Harper is telling us what we should call ourselves by saying Aboriginal, and he has a definition of Aboriginal that allows him to just merge everybody into this big minestrone that where there's no identification or no separation between a Mohawk and a West Coast Indian or a Mi'kmaq. And there are differences. There's cultural, linguistic, all kinds of differences. So I think a broader term like the one that's used internationally and written by the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People was written by those people. And I think that that's how I approach these kinds of things, is to identify as an indigenous person. And I say Mi'kmaq. I don't hesitate to call myself a Mi'kmaq elder because that's where I'm from. So I'm there as an indigenous person from this territory, from Mi'kma'ki, and I'm there primarily to talk about some of the things that we'll talk about in the next little bit here. Mostly that every time we get to a struggle or a gathering and we discuss the issues, whether it's resource or whatever, there's always an element that people tiptoe, dipsy doodle around, and that is the system that we're running under, capitalism, the empire, imperialism, whatever the hell you want to call it. And it never gets put in that context, the indigenous struggles, like the band council and the position they're in Pictou. That's a classic example of neocolonialism. It's colonial. So, and our allies, our friends and allies that are going to be there with us, they're not responsible for what somebody did 400 years ago. Their only responsibility as individuals and as peoples is to stand up and speak to what they intend to do about what's going on right now. And that's all I ask of them. That's what solidarity is not sympathy. Please, I'm going to go help you because, you know, you're in a terrible situation. We don't need no more fucking sympathy, to be quite honest. You know, what we want is solidarity to say, okay, I'm in this struggle, not to help you, the helping hand strikes again, but I'm here in solidarity with you because the struggles I'm involved in are part of the same problem that we all have, and that's the institutions we all live under. And all the prophecies, by the way, to dipsy off to a spiritual thing, all the prophecies speak about these times right now of bringing people together from the four colors. And I truly believe that, and I was given guidance many years ago with Art Solomon up in Ontario, that we were part of a thing that was for everybody to get together to share the prophecies. That was 70, 79, well, a few years ago. And it spoke about just these times that are here and that we're living in right now. And you can see it. And not only is it going to happen, it's going to happen like real fast. The things are just going to, if you had a graph, it would go like this and then start to dipsy up and it would just go up like that. And I really truly believe, like when you look at the Arab Spring, when you look at the awareness people have, they ain't got all the answers yet, but that's the direction it has to go. And the system has no way to deal with like what's going on at Wall Street and like what happened in Wisconsin. They don't know what the hell to do with that. All the police in the world can't stop the brain.
What are some key issues here? I know that sometimes this movement takes flak for not having a list of demands, but not to put it in demands, but what are some issues that you, as a Mi'kmaq, see that are affecting the Mi'kmaq that you're going to be sharing?
As it's in the struggle that the awareness comes, not from the book, not from what Billy says tomorrow. It'll be what are you going to do tomorrow, the next day, to act upon those things. And in acting, you create the understanding. Like, take Oka. When that happened, how many people knew what the hell was going on in Ganasadagi before that happened? But the minute that struggle opened up, people's understanding of indigenous issues, if you put a thermometer in their mouth, it might have been 20 the day before and it's 80 the next day. And it was the struggle that did that. The reality is that it's not, and it never is, just the issues in the indigenous community. Boat Harbor. You think when that air floats across and brings tears to people's eyes from the shit in that water, that it only affects blue eyes or brown eyes? You know, like it's one of those things that affects a given community more than the outlying community, perhaps, for sure. But everybody is affected by Boat Harbor. That's one way. And when we think about raising awareness for people, people get different ways that they learn. Like you may pick up a book and something will ring a bell with you, right? Or you hear something in a conversation. There's many ways that people's understanding can come up little by little. And none of us have come to the stage we're at in our life now as some kind of immaculate conception that just happened overnight. You know, we've all been as foolish as the people we're criticizing, you know? So I think what's important is that we take a look at the particular issues and see what it is about those issues that expresses that commonality.
I'm interested in the health of the Mi'kmaq community, perhaps the spiritual health. I know right now that there's a Truth and Reconciliation
Yeah,
Committee that's
tears,
going
yeah,
around.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just in my sort of brief interactions, it seems that you have a lot of people that, were placed in homes, don't know where they're from. There's a lot of healing going on, but there's a lot to be healed too. How is what's the health of the community like these days?
Well, it depends on what part of the community you're talking about, too. Because not only did the residential schools, like this is primarily about the residential school system, well, there was, for one, there's a number of people that are excluded from that or weren't taken into account, and that is people that were in the day schools and the people in Newfoundland and Labrador, and then the fact there was only one school here in the Maritimes and it was centralized in Chubby. So, like my mom's from Newfoundland, so what was there in Lewisport? Nothing, you know. And then well, as a personal example, when I was born, it was before the war, and 35, and as an unwed mother, there was only one place that unwed mothers could go, and that was a thing of all ironies. It was called the Ideal Maternity Home, and it was where the Butterbox babies were from. I don't know if you ever heard of that. Well, there was this I don't know what they were, Seventh Day Adventist, Holy Roller, something, some kind of religious couple, and they ran this home for unwed mothers. And when they went in there, if you had a little bit of money, if your folks were rich or from Boston or something, then you could go there, give birth to your child, come back, a year later, marry someone, and nobody would know the exact date of the birth and all that. And you would pay them a big chunk of money to do that. But if you didn't have much money, then you worked off your keep, which my mom did, right? So you had to, wash the laundry and stay there and do that during that period of time. And when I got out of there, mom took us to Millbrook, and the lady there took us in. And when her own family wouldn't, there was a cultural thing going on there. And because when she signed the birth thing, the long form or what have you, she didn't put my dad's name or none of that, so there's no record of any of that. So governments being governments, they want a paper record. Well, there ain't no paper record. I'm 76 years old. Both my parents have gone. My aunties are gone, and there's nobody left to tell the story. And I couldn't get them to do it during that time because they were the shame and what have you, both as an unwed mother and and the mixed blood, when they would stick handle it back and forth to each other. Well, you asked your daddy, you asked your mom, and they never acknowledged it. So I didn't grow up with that, but I grew up indirectly with that because of who I associated with when I was a kid, with the kids on the res and with the black community. So, I was a part of the civil rights struggle even before I knew who the hell I was. I was down in Alabama and North Carolina. So, my experience doesn't fit into the Truth and Reconciliation thing except in an indirect way. And then most all the people in Newfoundland and in Labrador, where they just had the day schools, they're not part of this.